So is it right or wrong to dance? I guess that question has been debated for a very long time now. And with that debate, you have people lining up on both sides. Those who very strongly say that there is nothing wrong. Those who very strongly say there's a whole lot wrong. And it's rather interesting as we have seen this discussion progress through the years, I guess in more recent times, there have been more Christians going toward the idea of there's really not anything wrong with that. It's a question that has been debated, but it's also a question that when it's been studied, I think it's been done somewhat of a disservice by a rather blanket definition of dancing. I suppose there have been times where someone has preached from the pulpit the idea that all dancing is wrong, period. And when you take that particular line of thought, sometimes it becomes rather difficult to defend your position. Those of you who are old enough or country enough to know what I'm talking about when I talk about clog dancing. Not a whole lot lustful about that from what I've seen. Those of you who are a little bit older, you remember a set of movies that came out that had Bing Crosby and Bob Hope on the road to various places, Morocco being one of those. And you'll recall throughout those movies, they'll just break out into a tap dance ever so often. Again, you watch those movies, and I would be very surprised if anyone ever said in the history of those movies, well, that kind of presented me with a lustful thought for those two men. When we do blanket condemnations, we sometimes get ourselves into difficulty. Because in the Bible, we do not have a verse that says, thou shalt not dance. In fact, we have a verse that says, there is a time to dance. And so, with anything of this issue, it involves not a blanket condemnation, but rather breaking down the idea, looking at what's involved, looking at what's behind the issue, and then reaching a conclusion on it. And tonight, that's what I want us to do. I want us to look at the ideas involved with this topic. And I want you to make the decision. You don't go and say, well, my preacher said, the church says. No, this is something that each of us has got to determine in our own set of beliefs after viewing what we're going to look at tonight, the rightness or the wrongness of it. Now, as we begin this topic, as we ought to begin every topic, we want to look at what the Bible does say. Because there are actually several passages in the Bible where we read the word dance. And as we read that word, we're talking about some kind of bodily movement that's going on. Oftentimes it's going to be associated, most of the time, associated with music. And as we look at this, we find what God says in certain places just rather matter-of-factly about dancing that's going on. In fact, we don't have to go too far, and we're going to find what appears to be dancing put in a rather positive light. As the Israelites crossed over the Red Sea, finished that journey, saw the armies of Pharaoh come to their demise. We read, then Miriam the prophetess, the sister of Aaron, took a tambourine in her hand, and all the women went out after her with tambourines and dancing. Well, here we are right off the bat. As they come out of Egypt, we find that part of that celebratory atmosphere, we find Miriam and the women involved in this. Something rather similar to that we find a little bit further over in the book of Judges, chapter 11. We're told that Jephthah came to his home at Mizpah, and you remember the vow that he's just made as far as this account goes. It says, and behold, his daughter came out to meet him with tambourines and with dances. She was his only child. Besides her, he had neither son nor daughter. I think that's very similar to what we find in the passage in Exodus, where it's again a celebration taking place. It's something associated with happiness and with joy. That idea continued on a bit further as we look in the book of Psalms, Psalm chapter 30, verse 11. The psalmist here talking about what the Lord had done for him says, you have turned for me my mourning into dancing. You have loosed my sackcloth and clothed me with gladness. One other passage. Coming to the New Testament, one of the parables that we find Jesus giving here, As we look at the parable of the prodigal son, it says, "Now his older son was in the field, and as he came and drew near to the house, he heard music and dancing." Now, we look at these examples, and I think what we find in common with these is, for lack of better terminology, it would be what we would call today a victory dance. I read one man who made the comparison to what goes on in the end zone of a football game when a touchdown is made. That idea of victory, that idea of expressing some kind of joy associated with that. We find that in common. But what's also interesting in what we find in common in these passages is that there is zero indication that any of this was mixed dancing. In fact, in the first two examples, we are specifically told it was not. In the book of Psalm, in that idea, I think again it's going back to the idea of victory. Here, though it's rather nebulous in this passage, we certainly have no indication that it would be any different. As I was looking up some various ideas about this sermon, I came across two references that kind of put this in a historical note. One is from a book called Hastings Bible Dictionary. And as he's talking about the idea of social dancing in relation to what we find in the Bible, he says, "Social dancing, as we now understand it, was almost, if not altogether, unknown in ancient times." And from a secular source, the Encyclopedia Britannica, talking about this, states, "In fact, dancing in the form of mixed couples did not exist before the 12th century AD. There is no evidence of couples dancing together, however. That was to happen much later, probably in the 12th century." So we look at this and we say, well, from both a biblical scholar and a secular scholar, the idea is that couples dancing, the idea of men and women involved in this, was just simply not acceptable, was something that just simply was not done. Well, let's kind of turn to the other side of that now. When we look in the Bible, do we ever find the idea of dancing mentioned in a negative light? And I think we do. I think there's examples of that as well. We look back to the book of Exodus, chapter 32, and we're going to read three verses, verses 6 and then 18 and 19 together. And this is where the children of Israel had built the golden calf and they're worshiping around it. So let's just read this together. It says, "They rose up early the next day and offered burnt offerings and brought peace offerings. And the people sat down to eat and drink and rose up to play. But he said, 'Is it not the sound of shouting for victory or the sound of the cry of defeat, but the sound of singing that I hear?' And as soon as he came near the camp, and saw the calf," and then you note here, "and the dancing, Moses' anger burned hot, and he threw the tablets out of his hand and broke them at the foot of the mountain." Two passages from the book of Exodus, but quite different in their nature. One is a celebration, the victory that God had given over the Egyptians. This one, showing the people returning back to the ideas that they had learned and developed in Egypt. And when Moses sees this, he breaks the tablets for everything that's going on, the idol worship and the revelry. I believe that's what we've got here in the idea of dancing. It's not the idea of a group of women in somewhat of this victory dance. It's more of a revelry, something that should not be, something that we'll see a little bit later in some of the definitions that we'll look at. I think one that draws a very stark picture we find over in the New Testament, chapter 14 of Matthew, verses 6 and 7. You'll recall this, "But when Herod's birthday came, the daughter of Herodias danced before the company and pleased Herod, so that he promised with an oath to give her whatever she might ask." I would suggest to you that dance was very much different than the dance of Jephthah's daughter. Here we find a very provocative kind of dancing that was of an entertainment value. Here is the king being entertained, his guest being entertained with this as well. And the idea then being so pleased that Herod makes this grand offer, and we know how that will result also. So we look at these and we see that, yes, dancing is mentioned again, this time in a very negative light. Let me put one that I'm not sure which side to put it on. We go back to the Old Testament, and we find as David was bringing the Ark of the Covenant back in to the city, it said David danced before the Lord with all his might, and David was wearing a linen ephod. And a lot of times when you hear sermons, this will be placed in the good category. Here's David, maybe that kind of victory celebration, and maybe it was. But I find it very interesting. And we know that his wife Michal is terribly upset. She's been dragged away from her husband, given back to her original husband David. She's not happy in her surroundings. So we understand that she is not in a good mood anyway. But I want you to note what she says to David. The thing that she picks out to say to him when he comes back in. Says David returned to bless his household. But Michal, the daughter of Saul, came out to meet David and said, "How the king of Israel honored himself today, uncovering himself today before the eyes of his servants, female servants, as one of the vulgar fellows shamelessly uncovers himself." Of all of the things that Michal could have picked out to bring to David's attention, it is very interesting to me that she picks out the fact that she felt like he was being rather indecent in front of the other women by the movements that he was making. We look at these passages, and I think we see a very obvious difference in most of them of what was involved in these later passages than in the ones that we looked at earlier. And there would be other references to dancing, but I think these give us pretty good indication. All right, so the question now comes, what separates the two? Hey, why in some cases Moses didn't say a word when Miriam and the other women were dancing that victory celebration, yet he did have something to say at the golden calf. What's the difference? Well, as we think about this, we've got to ask ourselves, what makes certain dances wrong? And I believe anyone who will look at this in a serious, reasonable capacity is going to come to the same answer. The difference that we see is the interaction of the sexes, the sexual overtones of the occasion. Whenever we read in some kind of pagan celebration, as the Israelites were having, that they rose up to play, we need to understand what that means. That was not something that was wholesome. Or when we read about this woman dancing in front of Herod, we understand what was going on with that. And so the interaction of the sexes, the sexual overtones, is what we must consider when we think about the appropriateness or inappropriateness of dancing. Let me bring a passage from the New Testament to our attention at this point, one that we're very familiar with. Galatians chapter 5, we find there the works of the flesh being described. And Paul says, and I didn't put the whole list, he says, "Now the works of the flesh are evident, sexual immorality, impurity." Now, this is the English Standard Translation of sensuality. But let's think about what we would find in other translations. In fact, if you use the King James Version, what you're going to find there is the word lasciviousness. That's not a word we use very often, but it's a very good word to describe very bad things. It sums up much of what we're talking about. Newer translations may have the word lewdness there. Well, let's think about our definition. In fact, if we go to Vine, the standard book that we oftentimes turn to, Vine says, this is a word that denotes excess. It denotes absence of restraint, indecency, and wantonness. Now, let's take that just one step further, and I want to go to Thayer, and I want to look at his definition, because I think it gives us a little bit better picture here of what we're talking about. He says this word means wantonness manners as filthy words. Now, listen to the last part. Indecent body movement, unchaste handling of males and females. All right, now what did we say is the problem with many kinds of dancing? It's the idea that you've got the interaction of men and women. You've got sexual overtones in this, whether we admit it or not. And so Thayer here is saying, when we read that word sensuality or lascivious or lewdness, the idea that's being expressed here is Paul is saying, the way you can know that you're living after the flesh is if you are in an unchaste situation with someone of the opposite sex. that you are having indecent body movements in order to please someone of the opposite sex. I think that we would look at this, and most would admit that many, if not perhaps most, of what we would classify as more modern dances would fit into this category. Let me take a little bit different angle at this now. I want us to note what people who in no way are trying to make a biblical point say. Sometimes, if we listen to those who are not preaching this message, we hear a very strong message resonating that should be preached. And I'm going to tell you, I am terribly cognizant about the words that I use when I preach. I know we have young ears that listen, and I don't like to put parents in a difficult situation. But I just want to read these quotes as they are. And I want you to listen to that and keep thinking about our question, is it okay, is it all right to be involved in this? And some of these quotes are actually kind of dated, which to me says something else. If it's being said 30 or 40 years ago, can we say that things have gotten better? That what we're seeing on the dance floor now is an improvement from what we saw then. So let me just quote from some of these. Again, going to the Encyclopedia Britannica, they had an article back in the 60s that was just called The Art of Dance. Actually, this was a 1979 edition that said this. Here's what they said. The end product is doubtless the same. Physical pleasure in the activity of dancing and sexual awareness of a partner. Now listen to this. Sexual awareness of a partner, whether embraced or half consciously observed. All right, you listening to that? This encyclopedia, just giving us the facts, says there are very sexual overtones in this, whether you want to admit it or not. That would be the paraphrase. We go to another encyclopedia, Collier's. This was from back in the 60s. And it says, the social dance has usually been the result of joint physical exuberance and sex stimuli. I found this one rather intriguing. If you go back a ways, you remember that one of the big trends, I don't know how far back, but for a while, you had the Arthur Murray dance studios. These would open up and you could order the books and learn from this. This is a quote from his wife, Catherine Murray. She said, for years, the female partner has to yield her body completely to her male partner in order to dance properly. This is but frequently a prelude to a latter surrender she makes to him when the dance is over and they are alone. One more quote. All ballroom dancing in pairs looks toward intercourse. In this respect, the Puritans were dead right. The development of no-contact dances has come about because one doesn't now need a social excuse to embrace a girl, but is an extent to it need not involve contact at all. Now again, a little dated, so the names of these dances are older ones, but just listen. Goes on to say, in fact, dances like flamenco or the twist are far more erotic than the clinch because you aren't too close to see one another. At its best, this sort of dance is simply intercourse by remote control. Now, was that a preacher who said that? Was that an elder? Alex Comfort, in his 1972 book, The Joy of Sex, is where that quote comes from. Now, here are people who are not trying to teach us a moral lesson. They're not trying to say it's right or wrong. They're just stating the facts for us. And I want us to see what they see as far as the majority of dances are concerned. Now, my question for us is, if those from the world know this, should Christians try to deny that it's not there, that those feelings aren't present? Should we try to deny that, well, yes, I can contain this, this is not going to enter into my mind? Sometimes when we tell ourselves we are stronger than everybody else, we put ourselves in great danger of falling. And so I want us to understand that as we look at this, the close physical contact, the handling of the opposite sex, we are putting ourselves in great danger of violating straight out commands that God has given us. Let's just look at two or three of these here. 1 Thessalonians 4, verses 3 through 5. For this is the will of God, your sanctification, that you abstain from sexual immorality. And note this, that each one of you know how to control his own body in holiness and honor, not in the passion of lust like the Gentiles who do not know God. Does that sound kind of counter to those quotes we just looked at? People saying this is what it does, and God is saying don't do that. Think about as well what we find over in the book of Colossians, again the Apostle Paul. For you have died and your life is hidden with Christ in God. When Christ, who is your life, appears, then you will also appear with Him in glory. How are you going to do that? Put to death, therefore, what is earthly in you. Sexual immorality. Impurity. There's our idea of wantonness again. Our idea of lewdness, sensuality. Passion, evil desire, and covetousness, which is idolatry. Some that are a little more of a general nature, but think about James chapter 1 and verse 27. Latter part of it, religion that is pure and undefiled before God the Father is this. What? To keep oneself unstained from the world. In other words, you don't get close. It's kind of like when you're cooking. You get too close to that popping grease, you're going to get hit by it. If I get too close to the world, I'm going to find myself being hit by it as well. One other that I think we find appropriate here is in 2 Timothy chapter 2 and verse 4, where Paul says, no soldier gets entangled in civilian pursuits, since his aim is to please the one who enlisted him. In other words, we're on God's side, therefore how close are we going to get to worldliness and say everything's okay? Well, we look at all of these things, and I think the underlying danger that we see, that we put ourselves at risk, is at best impure thoughts, and at worst would be the consummation of those thoughts. Now, with all of that said, we know what season it is. We understand what's going on in many high schools across the country right now. You go out like I did last night, driving along, stretch limos passing you. You see girls in these big fancy ballroom dresses. So what are we going to do when it comes to the prom? Let me tell you, I am around young people a lot. And I know how important some of these issues are. Issues that when you get 20 or 30 years on you, you're going to look back and say, why did I ever even care about that? But that doesn't matter because you're not there, you're here. And there are a lot of times when there is a social pressure to conform, to be a part of this, to go to a prom or to some kind of school dance. And it's a decision that every young person, and I would add, with the very strong wisdom and judgment of godly parents, must make. And I'm not going to stand up here and tell you, if you go to the prom, you're wrong. Or if you go to the prom, you're okay. I'm not going to do that tonight. I'll be glad to tell you my opinion. I think you'll figure it out before we're done. But I want you to make that decision. I don't want you to cop out and say, well, Greg said I can't go, so I don't guess I can go. It's okay. I think it's okay. No, that's not an option. Let me say this as well. These proms aren't going away. I came across a news interview about an hour before I left to come tonight. And it was quite interesting. It was talking about the prom, and it said that it is now a $4 billion a year industry. It's doubled in the past 10 years. You think it's going away? If somebody stands to make $10 billion off something, you think they're going to put it away? Absolutely not. So it's a question that even if you're younger now, that this really isn't on your radar, it will be soon. And you're going to have to make a decision about it. And so the way you do that is to try to put your emotions aside for a minute. Try to put aside the idea of I'm going to be a social outcast, everybody's going to laugh at me, da-da-da. Put that away for now. And take a good hard look at the questions that are raised by attending an event such as this. What are the things that we consider? Well, I think first of all, you've got to consider what kind of dancing is going to take place. I can almost assure you it's not going to be a clog. You're not going to find that at a high school prom. So the question is, how are you going to deal with that? As I was doing some research for this lesson, I came across an article that just baffled me in many ways. This was from 2007, so I don't know what the conclusion of it was. But this is from a town in Argyle, Texas, is the name of the town. And just kind of stay with me, because I want to read some excerpts from it. I'm not going to read the whole thing, but just listen to these. It says, Karen Miller, 53 years old, saw her first freak dance 4 years ago when she was chaperoning a high school dance attended by her freshman daughter. One boy was up close to the girl's back, bumping and grinding to the pounding beat of the music. I thought, that's just nasty, Ms. Miller recalls. It really had me sick to my stomach. Ms. Miller took the initiative and broke it up. School employees at the dance seemed oblivious, she says. They're obviously no longer. A new resolve by school officials in this booming Dallas suburb to crack down on sexually suggestive dancing and skimpy clothing has sparked a rancorous debate over the boundaries, what boundaries should be set for teenagers' self-expression. Skipping down just a little bit, Jason Cianis, 35, is the newly installed superintendent as this story was written. And it says, some parents blame the new superintendent for ruining their children's October homecoming dance by enforcing a strict dress code and making provocative dancing off limits. Disgusted, a lot of kids left and the dance ended early. Mr. Cienes says he fears current cleavage-bearing dress styles combined with sexually charged dancing could lead to an unsafe environment for students. To make his point, Mr. Cienes held a community meeting and played a video pulled from YouTube demonstrating freak dancing. I cannot imagine that there is a father in this room who could watch this video and be all right with a young man dancing with his daughter in this fashion. Boy, was he wrong. We continue on. These parents defend their children of Argyle as good kids and say they should be trusted to dance in the way that they want. It gets worse. Angry internet-empowered parents have searched public records to dig up personal details of Mr. Cienes' past, blogging spitefully about his divorce and his earlier marriage and fatherhood at the age of 17. In community chat rooms, some people were calling him a hypocrite and a power-crazed autocrat showing too much interest in teenage girls. The dancing dispute is proving tougher to resolve. Our community needs to show these students how much we value them by not allowing them to devalue themselves, says Spencer Jeffrey, father of a sophomore girl who supports Mr. Sienna's efforts. Others disagree. Now, I'm going to read you a little bit of a scary quote here. We never had a problem before. And one of the more outspoken parents, Barbara Roberts, says that she spent $400 for her 17-year-old daughter's dress only to have her leave the dance after a few minutes because it was such a dud. I want you to listen to that. I spent $400 for my daughter to go here. He has no right to come in and say that these things are wrong. The article continues. It talks about DJs, and sometimes they're blamed for the music that's being played that encourages all of this. And it just talks about how they're trying to figure it out. Why are they trying to figure it out? Because there are those who realize that the kind of dancing that takes place is not appropriate. Now I tell you, I don't go to dances, and I don't watch music videos, but I've stumbled across enough scenes on TV to know that the majority of what I have seen, I think, fits categorically into what we just read. Is that something that as a soldier who is not getting entangled in the affairs of the world wants to be involved in? That's the question I've got to ask. What's going to be taking place there? What kind of dancing? Secondly, I've got to ask, what types of feelings are being stirred up? Now, we looked at some of those quotes earlier. And in fact, in this article, I didn't read this quote, but one young man said, oh, we don't feel that way. You know, you may think it's that way, but we don't have any feelings like that. It's just something we go out and we do. Now, the question is, well, that may be true for you, but what kind of feelings are you stirring up in others? Because God makes it pretty clear we're accountable for that. Came across a quote one time that I think is very accurate when it says, a boy turned on is very hard to turn off. And if he's involved in these kinds of things and the feelings are there, she may not have them, but he does. He may not have them, but she does. How responsible am I for what someone else may do? Not dealing with this topic in particular, but you remember Matthew 18:6? Whoever causes one of these little ones who believes in me to sin, it would be better for him to have a great millstone fastened around his neck and be drowned in the depth of the sea. I think the Lord is saying we can have an impact. That what we do can have a very major impact on what someone else does or thinks or in a way that they behave. Let me say this as well. Prom night of itself is many times associated with sexual activity afterward. Now, we've got to admit that as a fact. In fact, I did a little research. I was trying to find if anyone had ever done a link between prom night and teenage pregnancies and did not find that. But in the process of looking, I stumbled across a couple of rather lengthy, I guess they had been chat room conversations at one point, that was asking this question. I tell you, I was amazed at the responses that were there. There were those trying to talk people out of it. There were those who were saying there's nothing wrong with it. But there was no one denying that prom night and sexual activity are very much linked. So if I'm involved in rather provocative dancing, and I understand that feelings are being stirred up in others, and I understand that there's kind of this overarching expectation by many of what's going to take place afterward, again, I ask the question, is that somewhere that I want to be? Is that something that as a Christian, I want to be involved in? What if someone says, well, I'm not going to participate, but it is the big social event of the year. I'm going to go because it's okay just to go and watch. I would first of all ask the question where God ever said that watching something sinful is okay. That watching something wrong is all right. Besides that point, there's always the question that a Christian's got to deal with. And that is, how is this going to impact my reputation? When someone sees me there, how is it going to impact me? Let me tell you a little story about someone who was not a teenager. I was preaching at a congregation, this was many years ago now. And there was an elder in that church who still had fairly young children. They were still in high school. And he volunteered to chaperone some event, Beta Club, something like that. And one of his chaperoning duties was to chaperone the dance thereafter. And he made the decision to go ahead and do that. His job included standing at the front door, watching who went in and went out, and then ever so often making a walk around the dance floor and coming back out. His wife told me that a woman who was also present at that dance came up to her, the elder's wife, afterward and said, "Saw your husband at the dance. He was having a big old time, let me tell you." Why? She knew his stance. She knew that he believed it was wrong. But yet his presence there somehow in her mind gave consent. Well, he must think this is okay now. Never, ever, ever underestimate the power of your reputation. There are people watching you when you don't think anybody is. There are people who are looking at your actions when you think no one really cares what's going on here. And many times, as with this woman, presence, though silence, indicates consent. There is never a point in our lives when we stop being salt and light. Never. There is never a time when we take a vacation where everybody's going to suspend judgment and say, well, I know he says he's a Christian, but just for tonight, we're going to forget about all of that. I think we also can understand that we need to have the same boldness as the Apostle Paul had. You ever notice how many times Paul says, join in imitating me? Ever thought about that? Is the Apostle Paul able to say that simply because he's an apostle? No. He's saying it because he's a Christian. Now, there were things he received that he taught because of his position as an apostle, but he understood that if he was living as God said to live, he could make those bold statements very accurately and in a very godly manner, saying, look at what I do, because I'm imitating what the Lord would do in these cases. Don't give yourself an out. Don't say, nobody's going to pass judgment. Somebody will. Somebody will. May not be anybody at that dance, but somebody will. Consider that as you make your decision. Let me say as well, we've also got to be concerned about the peripheral sins that are associated. I'm going to come back in the next two lessons that I'll be preaching over the next two or three weeks, and I'm going to talk about each of these. I'm not going to spend much time with them tonight. But let me just mention a couple. One of it is immodest clothing. Same news story that I was talking about earlier was on this topic. And we'll come back and talk about that. But I just want to tell you from experience, where I teach, there is no prom, but there is a banquet. And these $10 billion companies are still trying to get our money in that as well. So they'll send the sponsor 50 catalogs probably within the course of a year. You would be shocked to see the pictures that are put in there. Kinds of dresses, the kind of moves that are depicted. We need to understand that if this is a place where there are a lot of folks who are wearing a lot of things they shouldn't be wearing, is that really a place where I want to be? And secondly, I think something else that oftentimes is just kind of a given with these events is the alcohol consumption. I came across one statistic that said 1/3 of alcohol-related traffic fatalities involving teens occur during the prom and graduation months. If these kinds of things are going on, is that somewhere that really I want to be? Now, we've aimed this at a prom, but let me broaden it back out. There's a lot of dances for adults too. If these kinds of things are going on, is that something where I as a Christian am saying, by my participation, I'm letting my light shine, I've got the preservative quality of salt, or am I saying, I don't really have a problem with this? That's the question that I've got to ask. Whether it's the prom or any other dance, I've got to consider the ramifications. And what I don't want you to do is to dismiss lessons like this from anybody, including me, as just kind of these meanderings of those who are out of touch, those who are sticks in the mud, who don't want us to have any fun. No, that's not how we can approach a topic like this. The question I've got to ask is, what am I saying about myself? And more importantly, am I putting myself in a situation where I may not be very pleasing to the Lord? That's what I must ask. And you know, there are times when we're called on to give up certain things, and they're hard to give up. And I'm going to tell you, you're 16, 17, 18, these kind of events are a big deal. I understand that. But it may be that if I look at these and I say, well, there's inappropriate dancing going on, and there's sexual overtones, and there's immodesty, and there's drinking, this may put me on a pretty good foundation for the rest of my life if I start now taking a stand and saying, no, if it compromises my faith, I'll have nothing to do with it.